Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 219. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. Hey, we're going to dive into some Modern Horizons 2 spoilers. Wowee. And we are going to also talk about ye old Dungeons & Dragons set spoilers. I was trying to think as I was talking the name of that set. Forgotten Realms something or other. But there's only like maybe one or two cards that I really want to cover at this point. I don't know about you, Daryl, but as far as modern and like historic implications, there's not a whole lot in it at this point.
Okay.
But Horizons, big deal. Horizons 2.
Yeah.
Big deal. So before we get into that, though, I need to give a shout out to our sponsor, ManaTraders.com. You can use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast_5YB for 14% off your first 3 months. Again, that's Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, _5YB. If you can't remember that, check our show notes and you'll see the code in the show notes. But without further ado, Horizons 2 is upon us. The official spoiler season starts at the end of May, but they dropped quite a few of the previews on us early, including the fact that there would be some new strategies to like the pack, you know, delineation. And one of the card slots in the pack is going to include a newly printed or a new inclusion to modern, like a formerly printed card that is new to modern, basically. So the one that they previewed, we'll start with this one, is Sanctum Prelate. And honestly, I didn't even remember this was a card that existed because I'm not a Legacy or a Vintage player. But what do you know about this guy from those formats, Daryl?
It makes you very sad. So I can tell you the entire card. Without even looking at it, it's a 3-mana, 2/2 human cleric. When it enters the battlefield, pick a number, and then non-creature spells with that mana value cannot be cast.
Yeah.
So it says no. What people would do is if you're playing against Miracles, you'd play this on 6, and they can never Terminus you, unless they bounced it with Jace or like Swords did. So like if you get two of them going, and then like Jace is the only out, but like sort of Fire and Ice then keeps you from doing that, like with Mother Ruins, it just gets real ugly. Like, and it can like turn off Council's Judgment, stuff like that, or like stop combos from happening with like LED or Infernal Tutor or various different things like that. This card's a nightmare.
Yeah. So most it's like,
it's probably going to name one or two in modern.
Yeah. Fatal Push, Bolt, Path.
Yeah. Fatal Push, Bolt, Path, Inquisition, Thoughtseize, etc. Or like Abrupt Decay, counter spells, like all that kind of nonsense.
Oh, sure.
Or
you know, you could get the like 4 for like Wrath of God type effects, Supreme Verdicts, if it's that point in the game.
Yes, you can.
So, yeah, that seems good enough to play in Modern Humans, I'd think. Is this a main deck card, like a 2 of main deck, or what?
So the Death and Taxes decks played 1 in the main deck most of the time, but it was because you could get it with Recruiter of the Guard, and then like 1 or 2 in the sideboard. I could see this being like a 2-main, 1 or 2 sideboard kind of thing. Like you stack this up with like Meddling Mage.
Yeah.
So like the key here is I think they fight for the same slots almost in my mind, because with Meddling Mage you can like, very rarely is a creature ever going to be the thing you Meddling Mage, right? It's most of the time it's spells I've seen Meddling Mage. So, like, you can just slam Sanctum Prelate on the number of the CMC of the spell that you want to name and hit everything.
Yeah, with almost no drawback to yourself because you're, like, only playing Aether Vial. So, like, if you name 1 and you don't already have an Aether Vial and you're playing a 3-drop creature, it's like it was too late anyway.
Yeah, Aether Vial did not matter at all.
So,
and like you just like and you're playing it's like something like Storm, and they like start with like a Metamorphos or something, and they tap like low enough that they can't cast another ritual. You can just Vial this in on 2, and they can't Grape Shot, and they can't cast rituals. Yeah,
this, like,
this thing is a nightmare for like non creature decks.
Not to mention Storm does play Bolt on occasion, but like sometimes their like catch all answer is like a 2-mana like bounce spell.
Echoing Truth.
Yeah, Echoing Truth. So, like, if you do name two, it's, like, kind of a headache for them if they're like, oh, well, Echoing Truth was one of my few answers that I was just going to, like, plan to dig for. You know, now that's kind of, like, cut in half my outs to this problem. And
yeah, now I'm searching for just Bolt. And if you, like, have Mentally Made plus this guy, if you're, like, crazy enough to run both, and, like, honestly, you could do that and then, like, eschew Kite Self Rebooter and just have, like, blue-white things.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, what's the non-blue-white humans that you're playing at that point? Is it, like, Mantis Rider? And that's it?
Yeah.
So you could, like, greatly improve the consistency of your mana base as we, like, start to make that leap. If Mantis Rider is that important to the deck, oh, you're playing Noble Hierarch, too. Never mind. Not going to get away from five colors. Like, trying to figure out, like, can we improve our mana base?
Yeah. Noble Hierarch is kind of like the linchpin for those decks. But there's like a Bant. There's potential for like a Bant humans, isn't there? Because you could just like go Coco humans.
Yeah, sure. I mean, at that point, you cut like you lose Mantis Rider. So like if you're overly concerned with Mantis Rider, like then no. But otherwise, you could have something like Mayor of Averbrook, or you know some other strong humans.
Yeah, I gotta feel that. As we were talking, I was kind of thinking that myself is like, is there like there's an awful lot of choices for humans these days, and he's like, is there incentive to play like some other version of humans? Like people have their own pet cards for the humans deck already, and it's like, you know, there's people that like prefer like the General Kudros and stuff, and like some people just don't play them at all, and you know, there's those options, but could you just be like entirely three colors? And I'm thinking like the more I think about it, the deck is just so perfectly set up where like Thalia makes it awkward to play Collected Company and things like that. But there's like Thalia is so good that like, why not play Thalia, you know? And the mana base is just so strong with all the like five color lands and, you know, the alternative where you're just playing like Fetch Shock mana base is like, it's almost worse. You know, you might as well just play the Ancient Ziggurat stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the key there is like, what are you giving up? And like you're giving up the freedom to have that pain-free mana base pretty much. Like one thing I considered with the Elite Spell Mage guy that came out, the Paulo Invitational card was like, is that better than Kite Sail Freebooter? But it's just like another, you run into the Death and Taxes problem, which is where you have a crap ton of threes.
Yeah.
And so like you end up like having Noble Hierarch and Aether Vial be so important.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I mean, are there really a ton, like your twos are just pretty mediocre. They're just like Kite Sail Freebooter, Meddling Mage, and Thalia. And like, that's kind of it. You're kind of looking to go from one to three anyways. So yeah. Like, maybe you just like commit and like, say, I think that, you know, Kite Sail Freebooter is much worse than the PB Invitational card. And then like, find some slots if you really need more anti-control combo cards to like slam some Sanctum Prelates.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The more of these kinds of cards I see, the more I think like, is there like a reason to play like actual Death and Taxes anymore? Because like humans just does it better in so many ways. Like humans is just like a Death and Taxes with like extreme synergy, like tribal synergy plus like the best aggressive creatures. Like why bother with,
if you look at Death and Taxes in like Legacy, a lot of it is humans, like because they also get Mother of Runes. So like if Mother of Runes was printed, you could just like get away with playing humans as like a Death and Taxes style deck at that point. But like the only like non-human creatures in Death and Taxes that I can remember off the top of my head are like Flicker Wisp and Stoneforge Mystic in Legacy. Oh, yeah. And yeah, we have all those already in Modern. We just don't have the lands that make it go. So we don't see those get played as much.
Yeah. I do like the Eldrazi stuff, like with Wasteland Strangler and stuff. Like that deck can actually kill creatures. Whereas this is like good against like spell based decks. Like those decks can like really kill creature decks. And so there's like a different kind of advantage to playing those, I suppose.
Yes.
And there's some cute things you can do with that that's just like major value engines where you like humans can just kind of like fizzle out. It's like you're just like top decking Noble Hierarchs and Aether Vials late game. And yeah, I could see the advantages. So,
yep. There you go.
Didn't want to undercut that, you know, importance.
But yeah, Sanctum Prelate is one of those cards. It was like Containment Priest. It was like if there were like Legacy cards, I could say, I want that in Modern. Containment Priest was one of them.
Yeah.
And Sanctum Prelate was also one of them. Granted, it's like, I hate playing against Sanctum Prelate because, like, I'm mostly a control player, and they just, like, slam this and just, like, oh my god, my deck doesn't work! Because they turn off all my removal or whatever, but, like, it's totally, like, a super healthy card to have be a thing in Modern.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is a pretty comfortable reprint here. I don't have any concerns for this one. Like, we're even questioning whether or not it goes in the deck, and I think this is going to be, like, a perfect, like, some people prefer it, some people don't type of card.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's good. Now, it kind of leads me to think, like, do you think we'll ever see the 4-mana Monarch human that exiles when he comes into play?
I don't know if you could do that, man. That would, like...
Monarch's kind of weird for Modern, but...
It's not that Monarch's weird. It's that, like, that card is, like, extremely oppressive.
Yeah, it is.
Given the right circumstances. Like, the idea of the Monarch in general in a two-player game is, like, sometimes it's just, like, a stalemate that you can't break. And so, like, your opponent is just going to bury you in cards. So, like, I think that would be just a little too good. And it's not because, like, Monarch is broken. It's just, like, it creates this, like, linearizing situation where, like, if the best deck has this card in it,
yeah,
you're incentivized to also be playing that card or something that interacts with the Monarch mechanic, or just be able to completely ignore the Monarch mechanic, because, like, a crappy 2/2 or a Sword of Fire and Ice is completely irrelevant, and that's not the gameplay they want to move towards. But, like, in my heart of hearts, you say that, and I'm like, I would love to put Palace Jailer in my Ephemerate deck with Eternal Witness, Soul Herder, and, like,
yes.
Just... Because, like, the thing is, it's not when Palace Jailer leaves play that they get the creature back, it's when you lose the Monarch. So, you can just blink Jailer, they never get their guy back, and if they can't attack you and get the Monarch, it's just gone. Like, he just never comes back, it's in exile, and you don't have to deal with it. So, like, if you have a board of, like, generic knuckleheads that you can throw in front of attackers, and you can just blink Palace Jailer over and over, like, the game just snowballs out of control.
Yeah, that guy is nutso for that deck. It is a human, but it's probably too expensive for humans. It would probably be a good sideboard for them, but 4 mana is just, yes, like, too much for that deck, probably. It is extremely powerful, though, and that Monarch engine would put away the control decks, probably. So, I don't know.
Yep. I don't think the answer is yes on that.
Yeah, but that's the type of card, though, that I wouldn't be surprised to see in a set like this to really sell packs, you know?
Sure.
Printed at rare.
I think there are enough cards already printed in this set that will sell the packs.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they need any help.
Well, the set, it has 303 cards in it, so if this is the pool we're getting now, just wait for all the, like, comet storms and stuff that are going to show up later to dilute this.
That's fair. They have to press the comment button. This stuff.
But yeah, there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah, I'm just going to kick it off right at the top of the list here. I'm looking at a website, and the top of their list is Brainstone.
Uh-huh.
This is a really interesting uncommon. It's a 1-mana artifact that says tap 2, tap it, sacrifice it, draw 3 cards, put 2 cards from your hand on top of your library in any order. So, the first thing I thought of was Lurrus.
Yeah, Lurrus, Emery.
Like, play this card with Lurrus and Emery, and it's just, like, just maddeningly frustrating. Like, sure, it's, like, 3-mana, draw 3, put 2 back. But oftentimes, like, in your Lurrus deck, like, you're like, okay, I have some Thought Seizes I don't need anymore. Put them back, shuffle them away. Or, you know, in your Emery deck, it's just like, all right, draw some extra C. Like, it's card velocity. You see so many more cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, your black-white deck or your white X deck can get away with playing this card, and if it falls under the Lurrus mechanic, it works well, and it also goes with another card we're going to talk about here shortly to, like, give you this draw engine that you can search your deck for.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
So this is not just fixed Brainstorm; it's, like, upgraded Brainstorm in a lot of ways too. Because of the things you mentioned, like the recursion with Lurrus and Emery, but also consider that, like, it is a thing that can be sacrificed to trigger, like, Revolt, which is a non-zero when you're playing, like, Fatal Push. It's also a card that can represent an artifact in your graveyard for, like, Tarmogoyf and Traverse the Uvenwald. And I think this could, like, potentially be something for those decks. And I'm not sure how that looks, but like I'm looking at thinking of like the Jund Shadow type decks that are like into like the heavy fetch land packages already. Yeah. And they're like playing Mishra's Bauble. I don't know, maybe Mishra's Bauble is just better than this, but
it's just better because it costs zero instead of like three to get into your graveyard. Like,
yeah.
So Bauble's just better than that deck.
Well, that concept I think applies to other decks, and I'm not sure where that belongs, but that's a thing to consider.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting that they printed this card that it's fixed Brainstorm. It also does these like little hinky things. It's like puttable in these packages with if you're some sort of Lurrus deck. Which I mean, at that point, like maybe you already have so much stuff in your graveyard that you can't afford to like draw an extra card a turn for three mana.
Yeah,
but like. You can just like always just buy this back and leave it in play and like do other stuff with the cards in your hand. And then when it's convenient, you can cash it in for basically a plus one because at the point you're doing it with Lurrus, you know, you're gaining an extra card in your hand from yeah. the Brainstorm activation there. So, I mean, maybe this is a thing people do. I don't know. I'm sure people will check it out, see if it's cool. But it definitely does go with the next card on the list here that I'm looking at.
Before you leave this one, real quick mention Miracles, another possibility. I think that Jace has been like the sole like proprietor of like the blue white Miracles decks, and it needed something like this to exist. So Terminus, Miracles, this card might make it possible. Anyways, go on. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's true. But this card does play very nicely with the next card on the list here, which is Urza's Saga. It's an enchantment land, Urza's Saga. I don't know if it does. That doesn't mean it's legendary. It just has the typing. There's a saga. It's really strange.
Yeah.
But as this saga enters the battlefield, and after your draw step, put a lore counter on it. Sacrifice after lore counter three. So lore counter one is Urza Saga gains tap for a colorless. Lore counter two is pay two mana. Urza Saga gains pay two mana and tap it. Create a 0/0 colorless artifact. Construct creature token with it gets plus one for each artifact control, so make a construct. And minus or ability three, search your library for an artifact card with a mana cost 0 or 1, put it on the battlefield and shuffle.
Yeah, card's nuts. The Urza's Saga, it says enchantment land dash Urza's Saga. It's an Urza's land, is what that means. Like Urza's Tower is an Urza's land. It's not even like that relevant to those cards, but if you look at them, you'll notice that Urza's Factory is also a land dash Urza's. So it's like a subtype of the lands. So this is a really oddball one. Enchantment land comes from the fact that like Urza's Saga, the set, was an enchantment set. And then Urza's land, and then it's also a saga. So it's just a mouthful of stuff.
just a menagerie of stuff. But like, let's look at like what this thing actually does. So this is actually kind of a bonkers card for your like lands toolbox decks and things like that, just because of like the ability card text on the card. So like the first time it's just like a land, who cares? Like, hey, I hit my land drop. Mm-hmm. But then Saga 2, you can make some constructs. And then Saga 3, in response to it, you can activate the ability from Saga 2, make another construct, and then sacrifice it and search your deck for a 0 or 1 mana artifact. So you can make 2 3/3s.
Oh yeah, you can.
Basically, for the low cost of a land drop, you can, and you know, 3 mana for 2 turns, you can make some 3/3s. So like, it gives you like this long game engine. That also just goes and gets you 0 and 1 drops. So it gets you stuff like Mishra's Bauble, Brainstorm, Stone, whatever. Stars and Spheres, Engineered Explosives, Mox Amber, you know, that stuff.
Skull Clamp, Soul Ring, and Commander.
Mana Vault. Mana Vault, LED, Mox Diamond.
Phyrexian Dreadnought.
Oh, God, this is miserable. This is not going to be fun in Commander. It's going to tune up that Bomberman combo so easy. Voltaic Key, Sensei, and Divining Top. Oh, my God.
Yeah, imagine if Painter Servant. Isn't Grindstone in 1 mana?
It is. Painter Servant is 2, but Grindstone is 1. Imagine if Sensei's Divining Top was legal in Modern with this card.
Yeah, I think that would be problematic.
Oh, God, it would be so bad.
Now, this card is insane, but you have to, like... Okay, and let me just start by saying this card is insane. Like, I have concerns about it, but you have to consider the fact that the second... chapter of the saga is pretty rough. Like, yes, you can make a construct, but if this is like the land you play on turn one, not being able to have mana on turn two. Now you can tap for mana on your upkeep with, you know, before the second saga token gets put on or in response to the trigger, but that mana expires then, right? You can't use it during your main phase.
That's not how this card, well, yes, that's true, but that's not how this card works. It starts out as just a land that has tap for colorless.
Oh, it says gains.
Gains the ability.
Oh my god, make okay.
Constructs. Yeah, that's why you can make a construct both turns, because like both abilities are on it. So
never
like,
mind.
You could play, you can't make a construct on turn two, but you can still use the mana. And on turn three, you still can't make a construct because you only have two lands. But you can tutor, and you can tap it for colorless if you have something to do with that colorless in your upkeep or whatever.
Yeah,
or
in that during case, purely insane. Like, there's almost, like, no drawbacks. Now, you do have sacrifices after its third activation, right?
Yes.
Okay, but you get a 0 or 1 mana artifact, so you're, like, basically going to be upgrading it in every case.
Yeah, you're sacrificing a land to search your deck for a very specific artifact.
Now, in Modern, are there many, like, there aren't any, like, mana rocks that cost 1, so you're not going to be able to replace it with something that produces mana, per se.
The only one is Mox Amber.
Okay, right, Mox Amber, which is a little awkward. So, like, you're going to, like, lose out on mana, but I don't think that's a big concern for the deck that's going to be wanting this spell. I think they're gonna be running pretty tight mana. I don't think that you'd consider this like a traditional land in your count when you're building your deck either.
No, I think you look at this as a spell. It's like a Maze of Ith almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, this card's got a lot of potential to be abusable.
Yeah.
If people find the right thing to abuse with it.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what that is right now, but there's a lot that can be done with this, and it might just be something you like throw in, like, hey, you could put this in an Eldrazi Tron deck. You could search it up with an Expedition map. You could get like, you can get a Chalice on 0 into play for this. You know, like it's a non-zero. It's like sometimes that matters. Like there's some weird oddball cases where like something really powerful can happen with this. But you can also just like use it, play it to find the Expedition map too. You know,
so like I could also see this being a thing. I don't know how like this deck obviously isn't a big deal, but the like Surge Node deck that like. Does like the Paradox Engine thing.
Yeah.
You can use this to tutor up Surge Node or like a Chalice or an Astral Cornucopia to like get to be able to start dumping the counters on it. Like you can tutor up either half of that combo or like Core Tapper and stuff. So that like breathes a little extra life into this. Is like, you know, here's some lands that, you know, it's after your draw step. So you make it to main phase one, you can tap it for a colorless mana and then sacrifice it to go get a part of the combo and then just like start to roll.
Yeah.
So might be a thing. I don't actually know, but just the thought that those kind of decks could utilize this. But yeah,
card's insane. I mean, well, it remains to be seen what's going to happen with this, but it's not going to be pretty.
it remains to be seen how this is going to be broken. But if it's going to be seen play in Modern, it's going to be broken.
Oh, it's
going
to be seen play in Modern. I have absolutely no doubts about that one.
Yeah. So we've got a few other cards here. I'm just going to go straight down the list here. The next one is Counterspell.
Oh, what does this card do? Can you read it?
Blue, instant counter target spell.
So you mean you get you tell them that they can't play it anymore?
Yeah.
And then do they get to pay 3 mana or they can play it, right?
No, they just don't get it.
Okay. Oh, tried, Counterspell. Oh.
Tried and you failed. Good at. You know, both teams played hard, slapped you on the ass. Move on with their day here.
First of all, let me say, the art that they chose, kind of disappointing. There's so many better Counterspell arts out there. I don't like this one.
Well, I don't know. The full art, though, the full art Counterspell art's pretty dope.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But yeah, there's 20 arts for this card.
They picked the Master's art instead of the Mercadian Masks art, which is the clearly correct art. So
yeah, with the little Merfolk lady on it. Come on, that's the best one.
Yeah, clearly correct. So I'm glad we're on the same page there. But the question becomes, how impactful is this in Modern? So like, the fun thing that you always liked of of a counterspell game. Do I play Remand or Mana League or Spell Pierce? It's dead.
I know.
Dead.
Yeah.
You play one counterspell, you play some number of Archmage's Charms, you play some number of Cryptic Commands, maybe Drown in the Lock, probably not. That's it. Like, your counterspell suite is just done.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. I hope you're happy, Watsy, because you can only do this once, right? Like, there's no going back now, and there's no other counterspell in your back pocket for the future because you have now printed counterspell, and there's nowhere to go from here, right? You have dead-ended yourself at counterspell.
Yeah, we're done. Modern is never going to get a better counterspell than counterspell.
And... Well, we're saying that now, but 10 years from now, we'll be looking at the new printed one mana counterspell, right?
Or if they put Force of Will in Modern, sure. Okay, yeah, you got
like,
us.
Or like one mana Mana Leak or something. But
they did that. It's called Mystic. It's called a Mystical Dispute. They did that already.
Yeah. But you're right. This is I have big issues with that whole thing. Like the creativity of like which counterspells to run has been just completely removed from this. Do we have a problem with modern decks where like people aren't playing control anymore? I honestly don't know where we're at with that. Let me pull up some metagames here and take a look, because I mean, is it like the point where we like need to like rescue like blue permission decks by like printing counterspell?
I don't know either.
Because okay, I'm looking at the Goldfish meta report right now, and the fourth most played deck, 3.9% of the meta, is blue red. And it's blue-red, it looks like Through the Breach, Emrakul. And they're playing Mana Leak, they're playing Spell Snare, they're playing 4 Remands, they're playing 3 Archmage's Charm, Force of Negation. I mean, you've got freaking Force of Negation, Archmage's Charm. It's like...
Spell Snare, Mana Leak, Cryptic Command. That's like, those are your counter spells.
Cryptic
like,
Command, yeah. Prismari Command, even.
Nah, you don't even need to play that anymore. That card's dead. Like,
this, yeah, the printing of counterspell just invalidates so many like quality cards from modern.
Yeah, but yeah, so like here's the thing: is like realistically, and I'm being narrow-minded probably, but there are only like 6 counterspells in modern now. It's Mystical Dispute, Spell Snare, Counterspell, Archmage's Charm, Force Negation, Cryptic Command. 6 yeah. counterspells, like. I don't like you could convince me that Drown in the Lock could make it for number 7 because Drown in the Lock also kills a creature. But like I you would be hard pressed to convince me that any other counterspell exists.
Drown in the Lock is trash compared to those. I mean, it's a good card, but compared to those, it is so narrow.
Well, no, it counters anything and it also kills a creature, so it has flexibility.
But it's conditional when you can do it. You know, like compare that to counterspell is like
it's very rarely conditional, though. In like modern with fetch lands and things like that, the condition is very rarely not met. So like that's where I say like you could convince me that like because of how fetch lands are so prominent in modern, that Drown in the Lock is like the 7th counterspell jockeying for those slots in the counterspell collection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but, it's not even a debate because the mana base is not an issue where like you're worried about hitting blue, right?
Yeah, you already need a triple blue for Archmage's Charm. So if you're playing Archmage's Charm, you're also playing Counterspell.
Yeah.
Like there was never a question or an issue or anything about that. So we're just here now. So fire up your blue control decks with your counterspells and get stomped by the random aggressive decks that go under you and move on with your day angry that counterspell exists now and still isn't good.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'm gonna have fun playing counterspell in modern, but I'm not gonna be happy about it. Like I said, I've got plenty of great logic knots sitting around, got plenty of remands. I'll just flush them down the toilet at this point, right? Why bother with them? Why bother? No. Logic Knot is completely invalidated. There's absolutely no reason to run that card anymore.
Logic Knot is a totally irrelevant card. Remand is not totally irrelevant.
It's nearly.
Remand still has value in like combo control decks.
Yeah,
like that blue red Kiki deck or blue red like the Through the Breach deck. You're trying to assemble a combo, so like just like time walking them and drawing a card and like getting yourself closer to your combo is valid. But any mana leaks in that deck totally just become counterspell.
Yeah,
they are
leaks.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some mana cool leaks. Mana leaks too. Damn.
Yeah. eat your Texas Mana Leaks for breakfast, because that's about how useful they are.
Oh, thank God I don't have the Texas ones. Those ones are valuable. Yeah. I have the Jace's spellbook ones, I think.
Ah.
But I got some old-school counter spells in my Pauper deck, so I can pull those guys out. But you know what? The card, it's fine. It's a fine card for Modern, honestly. I don't think it's going to like break control or anything.
It's not broken. It's just like you're just not going to introduce a counter spell into Modern anymore from Standard that is a relevant card.
Yeah. And I kind of feel similarly with going back to Urza's Saga. It's like why wouldn't you play this in... You know, the creativity is going to be in, like, building the deck, but when it comes to, like, your deck, it just being able to, like, search for the piece you need for the combo without having to put much thought into it, it just leads to formulaic gameplay and formulaic decision-making. And I think that that's kind of, like, the opposite direction that you know, maybe like, making this game a little bit more, like, routine-based is better for, like, more people to get involved with it, but that's not what draws me to Magic. I'd rather like have like a puzzle to solve with the cards. And when it comes to like, do I use Mana Leak now or do I use Logic Knot now? Like, I've got both in my hand. Which one's more useful for this turn two counteraction? Because later on in the game, like, I'm gonna have to, you know, debate whether or not I'm gonna still have access to my graveyard to like delve, or my opponent's gonna have three mana spared. But now it's like, no, it's just like counterspell. The decision's already made for me. Urza's Saga, I get to my third saga, I find the piece for my combo and I look for it. You know, I put it onto the battlefield. The end. There's no choice to be made. Now maybe there's some toolbox elements to it, but that's certainly not how it's gonna be used.
No, it will not be used in the fun and exciting way. So I will agree with you on that.
That brings us to Diamond Lion, doesn't it?
Another card that will not be used in any fair, fun, and exciting ways. So this is what they said. They looked at Lion's Eye Diamond, and they said, to fix that card, we ended up here. Which is a 2-mana, 2/2 artifact creature cat with tap, discard your hand, sacrifice Diamond Lion, add 3 mana of any one color to your mana pool, activate only instant. So that piece right there is really important, because that means you cannot activate it to pay a card cost, because you like declare and then you pay costs. That's why it's worded that way. Good. So you can't like tap it to, well, it functions the way Lion's Eye Diamond is. You can't cast your Infernal Tutor by using the mana from your Lion's Eye Diamond.
Does this kind of avoid the problems with the KCI stuff that we were experiencing? People could kind of like get the loopholes where like you're using KCI like as a cost, yes, to pay the cost. Yeah. Okay. And that was really, yes, confusing.
This would never create that situation anyways, because even if you could recur this card, it has to tap, which is where they fixed the Lion's Eye Diamond. Lion's Eye Diamond wasn't a tap effect. So you could tap Lion's Eye Diamond, like with like, you could play like Root Maze or whatever to tap down your opponent's Lion's Eye Diamond the turn it comes to play, and they can still just sacrifice it and discard their hand and get the ability.
But you can respond You can respond to this activation, can't you? Because it's like an instant.
No. Activate only as an instant. So activate only when you could cast an instant. But it's technically a mana ability. Lion's Eye Diamond is technically a mana ability too.
Oh, okay.
So you can't respond to this ability, but you can't use it to pay costs, which is why they say activate only as an instant.
Okay, all right.
So if you can give this thing haste and figure out a way to toggle it out of your graveyard, you have effectively made infinite mana. That's a lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah.
Dude, nothing fair can happen with this card. It's my answer to this question. Nothing reasonable and fair can happen. It's not going to be your turn 2 grizzly bear that attacks your opponent for 2 for a while, and then like at some point you'll have an ability on the battlefield where you need to break it for blue or whatever. Now, people are going to use this to do the most broken, heinous shit they can think of, and I'm not happy about its existence.
Yeah, this one's trouble. I don't know much about how Lion's Eye Diamond works. I mean, the fact that this is a creature like is a little bit of a pressure valve for it, but you know, you can have a creature haste pretty easily if you really want.
There's two things. There's the fact that it's a creature and that it requires you to tap. So like, because Lion's Eye Diamond didn't require itself to tap, there was just nothing that could stop it. You could like just play it and activate it whenever you needed to. because even the tap, like tapping it didn't matter. And like the only thing that really stopped lines on Iron was like telegraphing it. So like you were playing against a discard deck and you went, oh, they have black, they have discard, Lion's Eye Diamond, go. You know, like land Lion's Eye Diamond, go. So they couldn't duress your Lion's Eye Diamond. But then like if you abrupt K, then your opponent's like, well, shit, can't really activate it because I discard my hand, so I guess I get abrupt K or whatever. Like that was really the only thing that like did anything against Lion's Eye Diamond that I've seen. So like the fact that this is a creature and can die a bunch of different ways and has to tap, like all of that is just like a bunch of different pressure valves to say this is the closest thing we could get that would make Lion's Eye Diamond a playable Magic card nowadays to nowadays standards. And it's heinously bad, and it's nothing positive can come from this Magic card. It's just like I cannot be convinced.
Yeah, I mean, so it's only going to be used in combo-y ways. The discard your hand, I'm trying to think, like, what, like, I want to get ahead of this, though. Like, could there be, like, some kind of madness stuff with that? I'm sort of interested in the madness potential. We've got, like,
Yeah, madness is totally a thing you could do with this card.
Like, is... All right. How about Phoenix? Like, Phoenix and Fiery Temper stuff? What about that stuff? Is that craziness? Is that going to work?
I mean, you could also do things with flashback. Like, madness and flashback are kind of the things that you can do this with. So, like, you can use it to pay for your past in flames. You can use it to madness your fire. Yeah. So, like, the first place my brain went is, well, Storm. Well, this is really slow for Storm because it doesn't have haste. But, like, if you have it, it's just in play. You get to tap, sack it, make some mana, discard your hand. Go off more or whatever.
Yeah.
This card can't possibly be good in any way, shape, or form. If it's good, that's bad for Modern. And if it's bad that it's printed because it's a bad card.
Right.
So like nothing good I feel like can come from this card existing. So
Alright, well that brings us to one more preview for this set, and that is a big doozy for everyone, and that is the reprinting of Fetchlands. And these are the Zendikar fetches.
Specifically Zendikar fetches. But, double specifically, they're also in the fancy old border frame.
Yes.
As a promo or something like that. Yeah,
they've got borderless treatment too.
Oh, they got borderless treatment too? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, or extended border is what it is. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I like the fancy old frame better, but whatever.
Yeah, same.
I want all my fetch lanes to look the same.
Yep. So there's so old border, extended treatment, and they're all rares at that. So you will be happy to know that if you missed out on Zendikar fetches the last two opportunities, another one is coming. I imagine these packs are going to be an arm and a leg, but...
I hope not. I mean, they said that they're not going to be short printed like most of the other Master sets.
Okay.
So hopefully that's true and not just like them kind of screwing with us and saying things to kind of play with our emotions.
Yeah,
because if this thing is printed like a regular set, like that would be unbelievably amazing.
Yeah,
I don't packs know. Would be $3, and I would be super happy about it.
Yeah, it won't be. They won't be there. I mean, they're gonna be minimum $7. I'd expect them to be like $7 to $10.
Don't tease me, Corey. I want to be happy about something Magic for once.
You won't be, Daryl. Don't you gotta set your expectations for this one. Now, the box art is crazy for this stuff. The collector boosters have, like, they look like the Ikoria, like, the kaiju monsters in the packaging. And I'm seeing now where the deck in Blackblade comes from, because the bundle box art has a very deck in Blackblade-looking critter on it. And that would be a really lame card to put on the cover of the box if that's the case, because Dakin is a really, like, pretty shitty Magic card at this point in time.
He's a poo-poo stinker, and he's my first commander ever. I even bought one of the Legends ones that I recently sold. He's a poo-poo stinker.
You know what? I bet it is. It's like a return of an old character. I bet they'll make, like, a new Dakin is what this is. So, yeah, cool. I can see the relationship, though. He's in the same pose as Dakin. He's got the same helmet on. So, yeah, it is Dakin. It's maybe, like, Dakin Reforged or something. You know what I mean?
Please.
Yeah. And then the set boosters have a squirrel on them. Interesting. Squirrels. So we might see a little squirrel theme going on for green. So
needs more squirrels.
This set needs Force of Negation like mad. Like
yesterday?
Yeah, like, oh my god. I'll say there are some cards from the original Horizons that are just outrageously expensive, and we've had that conversation many times before, but this is the opportunity, the perfect opportunity to fix those problems. And if WotC does not seize the day, we are going to see some issues with those prices going forward. And I think you're going to see a pretty immediate impact on those. I think, you know, Force of Negation right now is like, what, 80 bucks, 80 tickets or something?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, be prepared for even more. Like 77, 97 I'm seeing on a Force of Negation. So it can only go up if it doesn't get reprinted. So, all right. Anyways, we'll close on that. But I want to talk next time we get together about the cards that we most are hoping to see in this set.
Wait, did we want to talk about the Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh, yeah, I did mention that. There's only one card, and that was the Power Word Kill. Yeah, sorry, let me...
So is this going to be legal in Modern, question mark?
Yeah, this is like a standard... standard set.
Oh, it is?
Wow. Yeah, as far as I know.
Okay, I mean, if that's the case, then that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to read all the cards since I have them all pulled up besides the land. A couple of these are probably relevant. Two of these, I think, are relevant. So the first one is an irrelevant one, but we'll read it anyways. It's Vorpal Sword. It's black for an artifact equipment. Equip creature gains +2/+0 in death touch. Pay 5 black. Until end of turn, Vorpal Sword gains. Whenever an equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, that player loses the game. Equip for black. That I mean, that's going to just... People are going to fucking hate this card in Commander so much. Your Stoneforge Mystic or your Trinket Mage tutoring up a Vorpal Sword is just going to piss people off to no end. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's obnoxious, but...
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that like you can just do it with like Trinket Mage in your blue-black deck and just like, I got my derpy commander or I made a token, I guess I'll slap this thing on it and use my Cabal Coffers to pump out the mana to kill somebody. All right, cool. Yeah. So nobody's going to like that, but not really playable in any format. This card might be, though, Portable Hole. It's a single white mana artifact. It's an artifact. This is tutorable with Urza's Saga. Very important. When Portable Hole enters the battlefield, exile a target non-land permanent and opponent controls with mana value 2 or less until Portable Hole leaves the battlefield.
Yeah, that one's kind of cool.
So this is like actually a super relevant card for Modern, especially with the printing of Urza's Saga, because you can just like, you pop Urza's Saga, you go get Portable Hole and like eliminate some threat that your opponent has. Or like if it's a Grafdigger's Cage, you get rid of the thing that's preventing you from using your graveyard or a Rest in Peace. Yeah, this card seems very good.
Yeah, man. And I should mention too that a lot, like these cards are all references to like iconic D&D things. So I don't play a whole lot of D&D. I don't recognize them, but if you did, you'd probably be like, oh, Portable Hole. Yeah, that's classic.
I don't recognize Vorpal Sword, but I can tell you what Portable Hole is. Portable Hole is essentially like this magic item that you can pull out and unfold, and it's literally just a hole, and you can just put tons of crap in it. It just holds all your stuff. But you can fold it back up really tiny, and it weighs very little. So you can put all your like heavy swords and gold and stuff and not get like movement penalties for your character for carrying all your crap around, like all your loot and stuff.
So it's interesting that it's used defensively then.
Yeah. Well, so they're hiding something. So like you could also use Portable Hole to like – you could open it up and throw it under someone and they would fall in the Portable Hole or whatever. And like you can't get out, you can't climb out of the Portable Hole. Like you have to be pulled out of it or whatever.
Gotcha.
So like, yeah. Like there are all sorts of uses. Most people just use it as like a carrying device. But yeah, this is really just a nice reference.
Yep.
Power Word Kill is the card you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I think this one's pretty good.
One in a black for an instant. Destroy target non-angel, non-demon, non-devil, non-dragon.
Yeah. So
this is probably like a warlock spell or something in D&D. I don't remember off the top of my head, but
something like
that. I don't even think this card is good enough for Modern.
Is it an instant?
It is.
Okay, yeah. That was going to say, if it's not an instant, then we can stop talking about it right now. But at an instant...
I still don't think it's good enough for Modern.
It probably isn't, but it'll be historic legal, and I think it's probably good enough for historic. The
That's probably true.
The thing I would question is, like, we have Counterspell in Modern now at blue-blue, counter-target spell. Like, when are we going to get black-black, destroy target creature? Because we're at that point, yeah?
We basically have that already with Victim of Night.
Is that an instant?
Yeah, Victim of Night's instant.
Oh.
It's like non-zombie, non-vampire, non-werewolf or something like that. Like three very...
Yeah, and that card is not very good, is it?
No. So like, too much, man. Either of those cards, I just don't understand how they're better than Eliminate in Modern.
Yeah, Eliminate's pretty damn good.
Because Eliminate can kill a Planeswalker.
Yeah.
So like, you can kill Ren and Six, you can kill Illyana, you can kill... what's the goofy Teferi? I was like, what the hell is the Aurelion? Like,
Narset. Teferi,
Narset. You can kill all these like war planeswalkers. Like so the times where you really need this to kill a Reality Smasher versus like a Narset or Teferi or something, that's kind of the balance. Like, maybe this is good enough, but like, you definitely have to like be cognizant of that's the difference.
Yeah, and to be clear, I think that this kind of represents the power level of these things in general. Like, this is the one I'm excited for, and it's really not that exciting. So overall, the cards in this set are like kind of like, you know, not too much to write home about at this point, but they're just like they're decent standard cards, and I think they're mostly like kind of supposed to spark some nostalgia in the D&D players because they're like things that people would recognize. I don't know. It's not really my bag. But this one I did look up. It says replaces the core set in the rotation. So this is in the standard rotation. By the way, the 88th Magic expansion. 88th. Holy cow. There are a lot of sets in this game.
Oh, this is a whole expansion. I thought this was like player box set.
No. This is a set that's coming out. This is like Strixhaven, and then Dungeons and Dragons Adventures in Forgotten Realms is next in July.
Oh, okay. So this is going to be a thing. There will be a lot of cool throwbacks to Dungeons and Dragons, and I didn't recognize that was happening. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So Prosperous Innkeeper is the next card that they've given to us, which is one of the green for a halfling citizen creature, 1/1. Halflings are very small. They're tinier than dwarves and they're very skinny usually. So that's kind of why it's a very diminutive creature size. When Prosperous Innkeeper enters the battlefield, create a treasure. And when another creature enters the battlefield under your control, gain a life. So it's another one of those like Soul Warden type effects that also has the upside of being blinkable for treasure.
Yeah.
But very on theme. If someone comes into your inn, you're kind to them, you make a little gain, and you are very prosperous. Whenever you come in, you have treasure and money behind you.
There you go.
And then the last one is Tiamat, 2 and Wooburg, for a legendary creature, Dragon God 7/7, flying. When it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, search your library for 5 dragon cards not named Tiamat that have different names. Reveal them. Put them in your hand and shuffle your library.
I mean, it's pretty freaking powerful, but it was like a commander card, right?
Oh, that's a commander card for sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's not 5 legal dragons in standard that people would play, so that's a commander card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, that's the Adventures in Forgotten Realms for now. We're going to see more of those probably after immediately after the Modern set is rolled out. But the spoilers for those are coming at the end of May here. If you want to know more, there's a whole thing. There's a whole stream that they did. I think they call it like Summer of Legend or something. So you can look that up on YouTube. It's like an hour long. They just go over all the reveals and stuff. So you'll find out some more specifics about that, the things that we kind of glossed over, which like the packaging and the different like ways that you can buy the product. I don't, you know, like to get into all that. And frankly, I don't really know much about it because I never buy product directly from WotC anymore. It's always singles for me, you know, just renting cards online using manatraders.com. By the way, cardknucklifepodcast_5YB will get you that stuff for 14% off.
True.
Bing. That's my that's a glimmer on my teeth right there as I smile into the microphone.
Yeah, you shill harder than you've ever shilled before. Thanks for shilling it up, Corey.
Yep. All right, we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye. Modern Medical is a production of CarKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CarKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CarKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading CarKnockLife content.